It is 10:05 on WTOP. We want to welcome you into this month's edition of Ask the Governor. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam is with us, and we'll be taking your phone calls over the course of the next hour. 877-336-1035 is the number to call. 877-336-1035. You can also submit your question on Twitter using the hashtag AskThe. You can email us with your question, ask@WTOP.com, and follow along on Facebook Live if you like us on Facebook. Good morning, Governor. Nice to have you back.
Good morning, Governor.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on, and winter is finally here.
Yes, it is quite chilly. Well, unlike last month, there is no need to dance around the subject. We can openly talk at length about the Amazon second headquarters. You're very good at dancing, by the way. You did a great two-step last month when we had a few questions about it, and you were trying not to say anything of significance. Did you have an idea then of where things were headed?
Well, I would compliment you all on your questioning as well. But, you know,
we get an A for effort.
We obviously, there was a lot of discussion, but I will give credit to Amazon. They kept their cards pretty close, and so we really didn't know until the last minute. The announcement was on a Tuesday. I was informed Monday afternoon. And
that's
so,
what we heard, that the actual phone call came just the day before.
It did, and so we our team did a great job, and I think we had a great announcement. It was a really exciting day for Virginia. And, you know, I think a lot of people know this already, but there were 240 sites across the country that wanted Amazon to be in their region. And for Virginia to come out on top as number one, that's something that we should all be proud of.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about what worked. What were you told by Amazon as the reason that Virginia's proposal was successful?
Well, we had discussions, obviously, with Amazon, and I think we came up with a very innovative package, a package that was both modest and disciplined, and it was really focused on three things. First of all, workforce development, and whether it's Amazon or any other company, they want to know that we're able to help train their workforce, 21st century jobs. So we were able to, I think, put a good commitment on the table regarding that. The second part of it was transportation and infrastructure. And I think one of the things that really helped was our bipartisan approach to finding a dedicated source of revenue for Metro, the $154 million that we've talked about before, that then Washington and Maryland followed suit. And then we're going to do some upgrades in transportation. So that was certainly some of the package. Again, that needs to be done whether Amazon's coming or not. And then the third area that is not talked about probably as much as it should be, but is affordable housing. Mm-hmm. And that was very important to Amazon. And between the cities of Arlington and Alexandria and the Commonwealth of Virginia, about $225 million will be invested in affordable housing across the Commonwealth of Virginia. So, again, I think this was a very innovative package. There was bipartisan support. I am so proud of our economic development teams, the VEDP, our Secretary of Commerce. Just everybody worked on this together, and it was just an exciting day to stand up and announce they're coming to Virginia.
I'm sure it was. We have many more questions about Amazon, and a number of questions have come in from our listeners. People are curious about, well, what happens next?
Yes.
You know, now that the announcement is behind us and all of the waiting is over, we'll get to that and much more coming up on Ask the Governor after traffic and weather.
We are back with Ask the Governor. Our number here, if you'd like to join the conversation for Virginia Governor Ralph Northam, 877-336-1035. Governor, as we continue our discussion about Amazon's headquarters in Crystal City, talent is a word that Amazon has used many times when referencing the second headquarters. Virginia didn't have the most lucrative financial incentives when compared to some others. So how significant to the win was this Virginia Tech Innovation Campus that's going to be built less than 2 miles from the Amazon offices? How is it envisioned that this school will directly interact with Amazon?
Well, certainly that was a large portion of our commitment. And, you know, just to back up for a second, this is 25,000 new jobs coming into Virginia that are paying over $150,000 a year with great benefits. And it is all about talent. And something that we talk about all the time, Debbie, is, you know, no region should be solely dependent on one industry. And certainly in Northern Virginia and the greater Washington area, we've always been dependent on the military and government contracting, and we always will be. But with some urgency, we have really tried to diversify our economy. And what a great way to do this by a company like Amazon coming into Northern Virginia, bringing that type of talent. As you've heard me say before, talent attracts other talent. Mm-hmm. And the commitment from Virginia Tech for their innovation campus that will train over the next 10 years probably 25,000 to 35,000 individuals that will then be able to stay in Virginia, live in Virginia, raise their families. That's a big economical shot in the arm for us. And so the fact that Virginia Tech, George Mason was at the table, and this package also helps other colleges and universities in Virginia, to include our community colleges. So it's a real win-win for Virginia. But anytime you can bring that type of talent into Virginia, it's a good day.
Now, we mentioned Virginia's proposal to Amazon did not have as many dollar signs as some other proposals. So a big reason to celebrate that Virginia cut a pretty good deal, mm-hmm. I think you would say. But I'm sure you've heard some of the criticism coming from some corners about public funds going to help a company that's owned by the world's richest man. So talk about the approach that Virginia used in developing its package for Amazon. And how do you respond to those who are concerned about incentives, public money, public resources going for an effort like this when those resources are so scarce overall?
Yes, well, you know, this is what I call a performance-based package, and Virginia will not spend any money until we've seen that these jobs are coming and are here. So it's a very innovative approach that we've used,
and it's staggered too as well, right?
It is, and the phase one is 25,000 jobs, and then phase two, if they so choose, and I hope they will, is to expand to 37,850 jobs. And so there is a financial incentive, but the majority of this package, really over 70% of the package that we committed to Amazon, is investing in Virginia. And the point that I've made all along, Mark, is that whether it's Amazon or any other company, this is something that Virginia needed to do to be competitive with other states. And so we feel very good about where we are.
So you don't think Virginia could have won this without its package of incentives and all of what you put on the table?
Well, I don't know the answer to that. We just felt that this was a reasonable package. I mean, Virginia obviously has a lot to offer. We're a very diverse state, from the Eastern Shore where I'm from, the ocean and the bay, all the way out into the Southwest where we have beautiful mountains, beautiful state parks. I think Amazon wanted an area where they could be part of the community, where their employees could feel that's their home. And they looked at the Crystal City area, now the national
landing.
Thank you. I was blanking on the last name, but now an area where they can come in and really, I think, transform that area. And it's very exciting for Virginia.
I have to ask you, because there are a number of transportation and projects that are part of this package for Amazon. Evan from Facebook Live has written in to say, thanks for helping with the Amazon deal. We live in Alexandria in Del Rey. He wants to know, what's the plan to help with traffic flow through Alexandria and Route 1? Obviously, there are a lot of folks who say, you know, this is going to put enormous strains on commuters and the transportation grid that's already beyond stress.
Again, you know, we started this process, Debbie, with the dedicated source of revenue for Metro. That's vitally important to Northern Virginia. This package actually commits about $195 million, which will come from what we call non-general funds that will be invested in Northern Virginia for things like Metro, opening up access on Route 1. There'll be a corridor for individuals to walk from the National Landing over to the airport at Reagan. So a lot of good things are happening. And again, I would make the point that, you know, whether this is Amazon or anybody else, this is something that we really needed to work on in Northern Virginia, is our transportation and infrastructure. And so that's a large part of this package.
Crystal City, as you noted, has taken a big hit over the years with the military realignment and other changes that moved jobs out. Quite a few vacant office buildings right now, but those will start to fill. Will Amazon and some of the related business interests that are likely to come as Amazon builds up, Will that replace most of the jobs that in the last 10, 15 years or so that have moved out of Crystal City?
Well, I think it's a great point, Mark. And as I said earlier, this is transformative for the Crystal City area. And with talent comes other talent. And obviously, a company like Amazon coming in, that will stir other businesses to start and employ other people. But again, it goes back to diversifying the economy and to not be as reliant on the military and government contracting, and to bring in a tech company like this is just, it's a exciting time for Virginia.
Have you been in contact at all with Governor Hogan and Mayor Bowser about sort of a regional approach to this, where they can help and how they'll benefit and fit in?
Absolutely. We said from the start in our discussions that whether it was Washington, Maryland, or Virginia, this would be a win situation for the greater Washington area. And so I've had a very good relationship with both Mayor Bowser and Governor Hogan, and that's really how this process started. And I think Amazon saw that we were working together when we came up with a dedicated source of revenue for Metro, and we plan to work together, whether it's affordable housing where people want to live, whether it's transportation issues. But no, we have a very good relationship, and I suspect that will continue. I hope it does.
I'm sure you've heard, as you've referenced affordable housing, I'm sure you've heard comparisons to what perhaps could happen in this region to what did happen in Seattle. Mm-hmm. A much larger Amazon population there, of course, the number of workers. But, how do you see this region faring with people, having affordable housing, those who live there now concerned about whether they can stay there with others coming in? What can you do about that?
Absolutely. And part of this commitment, as I said, the kind of the third leg or the pillar of it was to really focus on affordable housing. And between the cities of Arlington, Alexander, and the Commonwealth, about $225 million will be committed. So there will be low interest rate, processes for people to have housing, grants that will be available for developers so that there'll be mixed income living. And so this has been, again, it's a commitment of the mayor of Washington and the governor of Maryland and myself. We have people that don't make $150,000 a year, such as our teachers, our first responders, and we want them to be able to live close to where they work. So it's a commitment to all three of us.
All right. I was going to say we'll take a break real quick and come back with more after traffic and weather. We are back with Ask the Governor. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam here with us until 11 o'clock this morning. We've got a few lines open, and the number to call us at is 877-336-1035. You can submit your questions on Twitter using the hashtag AskThe or email us at ask@WTOP.com. And again, you can watch us this month on Facebook Live if you'd like to join us and check out the video there.
All right, Governor, we are going to go to the phones for the first time this morning. Ron is holding on from Chesterfield. Ron, go ahead with your question for the governor.
Hey, Governor Northam, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call.
Good morning, Ron. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thanks. So, since you took over the office in January, you've hit the ground running, and I think you've done some really, really great things for the Commonwealth. I wanted to know what accomplishment are you more proud of, the big-time Medicaid expansion that just got signed, or getting Amazon to choose to have HQ2 here in Virginia? Thanks for doing this, and I'll look forward to your answer.
Ron, thank you for your question. What I'm most proud of is just the ability for people from both sides of the aisle to come together and as I've said, agree to disagree, but at the end of the day, do what's in the best interest of Virginia. And certainly that happened with Medicaid expansion and to, as a physician, to be able to provide health care coverage to what will be close to 400,000 working Virginians. That's just a big deal. And, we've made a lot of progress. As people could start enrolling on November the 1st. I met with our DMAS folks yesterday who run Medicaid. They've now enrolled over 114,000 working Virginians. And just for these individuals, if you hear their stories, to say thank you for now allowing me to go see a provider when either myself or someone in my family gets sick, you know, that's very rewarding. And obviously, we want Virginians, all Virginians, to have a job that they can support themselves and their families with. So this Amazon announcement is very exciting as well. So, but we've still got a lot of things to do. I've got 3 years left, and I look forward to working with people from both sides of the aisle and really making a lot of progress in Virginia.
Did you expect that kind of volume? This has been up and running now for, what, about 4 weeks now?
It has. And, that, you know, with Thanksgiving being a holiday, on Monday, believe it or not, we had 7,000 calls coming into our call centers inquiring and wanting to enroll in health care. So there has been, a great response across Virginia. And, again, if you go out there and talk to people and listen, which I try to do, people want a job. They want their children to have access to good education, and they want access to affordable and quality health care, and we're seeing that now with the enrollment.
Let's talk about some of the logistics, and we do have another phone call, I think is what Debbie is telling me, on Medicaid that mm-hmm. we want to get to while we're discussing this. What is the length of the enrollment period if you want coverage for next year? At what point do you have to be signed up?
Well, people could start signing on November 1st, but the enrollment will continue.
Oh, okay.
Just because you don't sign up by the end of the year doesn't mean that you can't sign up in 2019. So we're doing a lot.
And still get coverage next year.
Absolutely.
Okay. Just remind folks where they can go to sign up.
It's if they go to coverva.com mm-hmm. or .org, I'm not sure. .org. Yes.
Okay.
So coverva.org.
Okay.
All right. Let's take another phone call here. Reed is calling in from Falls Church. Reed, great to have you here on Ask the Governor. What would you like to ask Governor Northam?
Governor Northam, thank you for taking my call. Thanks for all your amazing work. I had a question. So we're talking about Medicaid. So I think it's a huge program. It's amazing for what it can do for people. But I do know quite a few individuals, unfortunately, who are abusing the system. You know, they are buying these, I don't know how, they're buying things like fidget spinners and things that they don't need. So what are you doing to curtail people from abusing the system so that they don't take away money from people who actually need the Medicaid system in order to get the, like, you know, proper treatment that they need?
Controls for abuse in the system.
Yes, and that's something that, you know, we're obviously aware of, and I appreciate the call, and we do monitor that closely. I would hope that that's just a minority of all calls or uses of Medicaid. One of the things that I will just emphasize while we're on this point, whether it be Medicaid, Medicare, or just health care in general, the escalating cost of health care are something that we've got to wrap our arms around. So as governor and as a physician, this is something that I am very intent on doing. So looking at things like moving from a quantity-based system to an outcome-based system, looking at prevention rather than treating disorders like cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, things that can be prevented. There are a lot of things that we can do and need to do to address the cost issue. So hopefully in the next 3 years, I'll be able to work on that.
Governor, there's an issue that has a lot of folks in this region once again focused on what's happening on Capitol Hill and with the administration. The lame duck Congress has important work to do to pass some federal spending bills to keep the government running past December. President Trump has made funding for his border wall a critical demand and has indicated he won't hesitate to shut down the government if he doesn't get what he wants. What insight can you provide to us right now about this latest shutdown showdown? Does your delegation feel like it's going to happen?
Well, I certainly hope not. We've been down this road before, Mark,
sure.
With government shutdowns and sequestration. And, you know, that's just, I hope, something that we can avoid. I will say that I think that there was an awakening on Election Day. I think people out there are looking for individuals who have vision, who are there for the right reason, that have a moral compass. We obviously picked up three congresswomen from Virginia. All three are just tremendous. They're talented. And I think they'll really go to Washington with the mission of getting something done. And that's what American people are looking for. And just the threats, the fear-mongering that are coming out of the White House, it just needs to stop, Mark, and I hope it does.
Are there any provisions that you have to make in Virginia every time the feds get close to potentially shutting down the government? Do you guys have to roll into action with any provisions before that would happen?
Well, I think the main challenge for us, Debbie, is that, you know, as I said earlier, we are still very dependent on the military and government contracting. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of federal workers that live in Virginia. So, yes, we have to monitor this very closely, and it impacts our economy, and it's just something we've been down this road, and it's not in our best interest. And I hope they will find ways of remedying things without shutting down our government.
Stay with us. Much more to come with Governor Northam as we take a look ahead to the new Congress and also to the upcoming General Assembly session, which won't be long before that's gaveling in at the beginning of next year. That and more still to come. We are back on Ask the Governor here at WTOP with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam. And your phone calls at 877-336-1035. Tweet your question with the hashtag AskThe or email us. The address is ask@WTOP.com.
And we want to talk a little bit about this new Congress that you just referenced. The midterms, of course, are over. Many say Virginia is no longer a swing state, but that it has turned from purple to blue. And in the new Congress, just four of Virginia's House members are Republicans now. Seven are Democrats. Virginia's delegation flipped. Did that surprise you?
No, it didn't. And, you know, we saw back in 2017 when we ran statewide that there was just a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of excitement. People were looking for a change. I think that the fear mongering, the hatred and the bigotry that was coming out of Washington is just something that Virginians and I think Americans didn't want. And so we saw that energy continue in 2018, and we called it the blue wave. And we went from four congressmen to now seven in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And so I think the people spoke. And again, as I said earlier, I think we had great candidates, and they're ready to get to work and do some good things for Virginia and do some good things for this country.
What is your idea of success with Democrats in the majority in the House come January? What do they have to do for Virginia and for the nation, in your view, to be successful?
Well, I think they have to, number one, keep what's going on in the White House in check. And there's nothing better than balance. And, you know, prior to this election, the Republicans controlled both the House, the Senate, and obviously the executive office. And now we have some balance. And that's really, you know, our founding fathers were very smart the way they designed this system. And so we have some balance. I think we can keep things in check. And now they can hopefully sit down at the table and address issues like health care, address issues like transportation and infrastructure, address issues like comprehensive immigration reform. All of these things need to be addressed. We haven't seen a lot of progress prior to now, and I hope with the new makeup of Congress that we'll start seeing some improvements.
As you know, the House Democrats are voting today to pick its new leadership, including House Speaker. The new Virginia 7th District Congresswoman Abigail Spanberger campaigned about not supporting Nancy Pelosi. What's your view? Do you support these newly elected Democrats, many of whom say, you know, it's time for a new direction or a fresh start for the Democratic Party?
You know, Debbie, I've been in their shoes. You know, I entered the Senate 10 years ago and came in with some ideas. I learned that it's actually good to, when you can, especially dealing with your caucus, to be a team player. We need to do that. So I think there will be a learning curve for the new congresswomen, and certainly that's an issue. I've got enough fires to fight in Virginia right now, so they'll sort that out, and I think they'll hopefully make a good decision on who their majority leader is.
As you watch this, are you satisfied that Democrats on the Hill are getting some new blood into the pipeline? A lot of these folks have been in leadership and in charge for a long time.
I think that, you know, there again, I know all three of the women that were elected to Congress. They all have great minds, and I think they want to do the right thing. So I think you'll see some good progress being made. To have new ideas, younger people come in is always a good thing. One of the things that I will be focused on, we always have elections in Virginia, perhaps too many, but that's the reality. And in 2019, all 140 legislators are up for reelection, and I'm going to do everything that I can to make sure that we return our majority in both the House and Senate so that we can get back on offense, stop playing so much defense, and get some good things done in Virginia.
Well, since you mentioned 2019, the battle over redrawing the House of Delegates map is headed to the U.S. Supreme Court. Earlier this year, as many people know, a federal court ruled that lawmakers had illegally packed black voters into 11 House districts. A special session of the General Assembly didn't produce a resolution, and the appeal before the High Court now at the request of House Republicans. This is certainly not the first time redistricting in Virginia has gone before the High Court. What's your view on where things stand, and do you have a prediction of how this might turn out?
Well, the legal system is playing out, and the Republicans in the House have appealed to the Supreme Court. They are going to listen to the arguments. What I would hope and what I have encouraged is that this be done in an expeditious manner so that we have maps that are drawn early in 2019 so that individuals that are running will know the districts, be able to participate in the primaries, and then obviously the general election. So that's what the people deserve. Hopefully the courts will take care of this in a quick fashion and do it so that these districts are drawn fairly so that we can get rid of the gerrymandering. And so that's what we hope. And then certainly in 21, we have redistricting, and I want it to be a nonpartisan redistricting commission that deals with that. That's what the people deserve. People deserve to choose their representatives rather than politicians picking the voters, and that's the way it is right now.
Isn't there a court-ordered redrawing already underway by an outside party? What happens to that while the Supreme Court is considering this?
Absolutely, and so as we speak, those maps are being drawn, and that will be introduced early in January, and the Republicans are going to in the process of applying for a stay. If that stay is not granted, then those maps will continue to be drawn, and then it'll depend on what the Supreme Court does.
I have to ask, will state leaders, either in the General Assembly or in your administration, reveal to Virginia residents how much all of this legal squabbling over district lines is costing? The legal fees and all of whatnot can't be, probably aren't free, and it takes up a lot of time, I'm sure, in some corners of state government. Are there some programs that are going to be cut because we're spending money on this?
No, I don't think there are any programs that are going to be cut, but it does take resources to do this, Mark, and the sooner it can be resolved, the better. And again, at the end of the day, we need maps. People need to know what districts they're in so that we can have fair elections.
All right. We are back with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam. It's WTOP's Ask the Governor program. The last 20 minutes, 877-336-1035. Governor, federal authorities have presented a dire climate change assessment recently that contains predictions that could threaten basically the planet, but especially Virginia's ports, coastal real estate, and agriculture. The Trump administration has been rolling back, as you know, environmental protections, which it finds to be unfriendly to American business. How are you processing this climate report as governor? What can you do to protect these Virginia interests?
You know, I take it very seriously, Debbie. And when I served in the Senate, I actually was a member of Governor Kane's Climate Change Commission. Then Governor McAuliffe had one as well that we followed. And I am a scientist, so I believe in climate change. I believe in global warming. I can promise you that the sea level is rising. If anybody doesn't believe that, come visit me on the Eastern Shore and maybe take a tour of Tangier Island. But our administration is focused on weaning ourselves away from fossil fuels. We need to put less carbon into the atmosphere. And just a couple of things that I would like the listeners to know. We are committed to 3,000 megawatts of renewable energy over the next 3 years. That's enough to to provide electricity to 750,000 homes in Virginia. We have a resiliency officer who is working on sea level rise. It's a retired admiral, Admiral Phillips, and she is doing a wonderful job. We just recently took some of the settlement from Volkswagen. We've opened up charging systems throughout the Commonwealth of Virginia. We're moving to electric buses. We have two offshore wind turbines. And I think people will see when I introduce my budget in just a couple of weeks, there'll be a significant investment in conservation, probably close to 2% of our budget, and that's something that hasn't been done in a long time. So we take the environment very seriously, and I think we're making some important steps. I have a tremendous number of friends in the environmental community, and I want to continue that relationship, and I think working together we can move significantly toward renewable energy over the next 3 years.
Governor, you've been criticized recently by environmentalists for your removal of two members of the Air Pollution Control Board just a couple of weeks before a crucial vote on a permit for a compressor for the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. Some say that the emissions from this compressor could have negative effects on a nearby community, a historic African-American community. The two board members who are now out had raised some questions about the safety of this compressor. We know that their terms had expired, but it's not unusual for folks to serve beyond expired terms. Many others are currently doing so. Why, at this point, would you replace these members at such a critical time in this board's work as it relates to the Atlantic Coast Pipeline?
Well, we have a number of boards and commissions, and that's the job of the governor to appoint members. These members that were replaced on both the air quality and the water quality, their terms expired back in June. We've had a number of people that are interested in serving on those two boards. We vetted their applications, and I have replaced the two members of both the Air and Water Board, I think, with some very qualified individuals, and I would ask the listeners to really give them a chance, let them do their job, and I think they'll be pleased with what they do. One of the other things I would say, Mark, and this has brought light to something that I think hopefully the listeners will take heed, is that we have a number of boards and commissions. Some of them are easier to replace than others, and I would just encourage anybody that's interested in serving Virginia to go online and look at the boards that are available, and if they're interested in serving, please let us know, because we're always looking for qualified, talented people to do that.
Governor, when you look at the optics of this, and I think that's, folks who are not privy to the process that you're going through behind the scenes, they're wondering, why is it happening now when there is a crucial vote? Why not wait until after the work related to this vote? I mean, there had been quite a bit of work that went into getting to this point. Why not make the switch after the board casts that vote?
I know there have been a lot of questions about the timing, but again, these terms expired back in June. There were well-qualified people that were willing to work on these boards, and they were scheduled to take a vote in November. This process didn't just pop up overnight. They chose not to take that vote, but we had planned to make those changes, and that's what I did.
We get a fair share of emails and calls related to the pipeline projects and some of the individual elements of that folks have some challenges with and maybe disagreeing with what's playing out. What is your message to environmentalists who feel some of them feel abandoned by you, and they say that they supported you during your campaign, and they wonder where your head is on issues that are important to them?
Well, like I said, I just mentioned some of the things that we're working on together. I have a lot of friends in the environmental community. We've done some good things, and I look forward to continuing to do that. So just working together, moving toward renewable energy is something that's important to me. As far as the pipeline, Mark, I would say that there's not a lot of middle road on that issue. There are a lot of people that want to proceed with the pipeline. There are a lot of people that don't want to. And I have tried to take the position of being fair. I'm not trying to play favorites. And I've said all along that we need to use science. We need to use the law. We need to take people's property rights into account. amount, and if the pipeline moves forward. All of these things need to be considered. And so I have tried to be as fair as I can, but I hear discussion on both sides of that issue.
So your new members to this board, they will not be present when this vote is taken on the compressor issue, which is important for the pipeline. So that leaves the board, I believe, with four voting members. Are you, because one person, I guess, has abstained from voting, one of the remaining five. Are you comfortable with the board being able to proceed and cast a vote with, you know, all of the different interests represented?
Absolutely. And, you know, I didn't think it was fair. I had no expectations from the time I made these appointments that they would be voting. So we tried to make that clear. Obviously, it's a learning curve, and they need to catch up to speed. And also, there's a lot of political pressure on these individuals. And I would just ask people to let them do their job. Let them be as objective as they can be. Let them know of the law of the science and then make their decision. But the two new appointees, I had no expectations that they would be voting in December.
All right. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about legalized sports betting in Virginia.
This is Ask the Governor on WTOP, 877-336-1035. To ask your question to Governor Ralph Northam of Virginia, tweet us with the hashtag AskThe, or you can email with ask@WTOP.com in the address line.
All right, Governor, a number of Virginia lawmakers appear poised and ready. They have an interest in legalized sports betting after the Supreme Court cleared the way for it. Virginia is one of just 11 states that doesn't have a casino. So ahead of next year's General Assembly session, we're hearing a little bit about a couple of gambling-related bills. We're going to go to the phones real quick and talk with Frank, who's calling in from Annandale. Frank, what's your question regarding sports betting for the governor?
Yes, good morning, Governor. I guess on Tuesday, the WTOP News reported that Senator Chad Peterson was going to sponsor a bill to legalize sports betting on professional games, and that the proceeds would be used for supporting tuition at the community colleges. Earlier, you had mentioned that the importance of developing talent was an important consideration for Amazon, coming to Virginia. So I was wondering, do you have a position on that? I know some people, are against sports betting and so forth. However, the cost of this sort of activity would appear to be about the same as buying lottery tickets. So I was wondering, what is your position on that?
All right, Frank, thank you.
Frank, thank you so much for your question and for listening. It's a great question, and you know, Debbie said that she'd heard some things about sports betting. You're going to hear a lot more about it, I believe, when the legislators come back to Richmond. And what started this, Frank, was the reopening of Colonial Downs, which is in New Kent County, to bring horse racing back to Virginia. And with that, betting machines. And now there have been folks that are talking about casinos. They're looking at one the Pamunkey Indians are promoting in Hampton Roads. There's also discussion out in Bristol to open a casino out there. And then finally, you mentioned the sports betting, which is done in a lot of other states. And both Senator Chad Peterson, he is introducing legislation. I know Delegate Mark Sickles is as well. And my approach to this, Frank, is I've been open-minded to it, but I would say everything in moderation. And I think we need to kind of tread lightly and take our time. And we need to hear from individuals like you. How do you feel about gambling and casinos and sports betting in Virginia? So we're going to certainly listen. I think we'll probably put a commission together to see how all this should be housed, because it's kind of spread out. It's a bit complicated throughout our agencies right now. And so if we do it, we certainly want to do it the right way. There's also been discussion on whether this should be handled by the lottery system. And so a lot of discussion will ensue, I think, over the next few months. And I appreciate your all's input. And I guess, again, the bottom line will will be everything in moderation.
As you know, Maryland and D.C. are also considering sports betting. Are you concerned at all that Virginia needs to get in on this and act or potentially lose out on revenue that could go to neighboring jurisdictions?
Great point, Debbie. And, you know, whether it's casinos or horse racing or sports betting, when individuals enjoy doing this, that it's part of their lifestyle, when it's going across our borders into Maryland and other states, you know, we need to really step back and say, you know, should we be keeping that revenue in Virginia? And that's why I've been open-minded to it. And we just want to do it the right way, and we do want to do it responsibly.
Speaking of revenues, by the time we chat with you again on this program, it'll be 2019, and lawmakers will be back in session in Richmond, your favorite time of the year, I can imagine. And you will have unveiled your budget amendments in the next few weeks as well. Can you tell us a little bit about what your priorities will be with those budget amendments, and will it likely include some dollars, transportation dollars for this region that were lost when the dedicated funding was approved for Metro?
Well, you know, our economy in Virginia is doing very well. Our revenue for the month of October of this year was 10% higher than last October. So things are going very well. We do have some resources that we want to invest. And so we're looking at a lot of options. I'll obviously work with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle. The Republicans control both the House and the Senate. But some areas that I really want to focus on as far as investing, number one is education. Our teachers still are getting way underpaid compared to other states. If we're going to be able to recruit talented teachers and retain them, we certainly need to pay them. Broadband is something, Mark and Debbie, that I am committed to. There's too many pockets throughout Virginia that don't have access to broadband. Mm-hmm. And then finally, we'll probably put some more money in our reserve fund to make sure that we continue to be prepared for that rainy day, as we say, and that we keep our rating agencies happy and can continue to enjoy a AAA bond rating.
Now, you have talked to us about a potential tax overhaul as something that you would like to see at some point in Virginia, perhaps not in a modest way. I think you've mentioned that you'd like to look at this top to bottom. Is this the time right now for that, and do you see that being a priority in next year's General Assembly session?
Well, anytime you start talking about taxes and tax reform, it can get complicated in a hurry. The first step that we need to make is to conform to the federal tax code. That's something that we hopefully will do early in the session, and that will be retroactive to 2018 taxpayers. And then we need to have a discussion about comprehensive tax reform, and there's a lot of enthusiasm from folks on both sides of the aisle, but it's two separate issues. One is conformity, the other is tax reform, and we'll be addressing both of those as we move forward.
About 30 seconds left in the show. We're going to talk to George calling in from Annandale. George, what's your question?
Hey, good morning, and thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to ask the governor, with the returning veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan and other deployments, are there any new veteran programs that we can look out for in the near future?
Wow, that's a great question. And we are committed to being the most veteran-friendly state in the country. And absolutely. And what we're trying to do is to make sure that they have access to education, access to employment, access to being entrepreneurs, and most importantly to me, access to health care. So we actually just opened up another veteran center at the Pentagon to do that very thing, George, to make sure that we're reaching out and taking care of the needs of our veterans. They are highly skilled and trained, and we want as many of them as we can to live and work and raise their families right here in Virginia.
Ooh. Governor, we got a lot in that hour. Thank you so much for taking our questions, and happy holidays to you and your family.
Absolutely. Thank you, and happy holidays, and I hope everybody has a peaceful and safe holiday season this year. So thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
We'll see you in the new year. Thanks, Governor.
See you in 2019.